I've said it before and I'll say it again. The ultimate goal of political correctness is to overturn and replace biblical and traditional values throughout America and the world. I'm Dr. Fred. You're listening to another episode of Study, Grow, Know.
Welcome to Study, Grow, Know, where we discuss theology, prophecy, and current political issues from a conservative biblical perspective. Here's your host, Dr. Fred DeRuvo.
Welcome to another episode of Study, Grow, Know. You know, there are too many things happening in the world, and especially in America right now, that are either tinged with or completely undergirded by political correctness. And with the blinders off, it has become extremely easy to recognize them and point them out. Those who profit, I guess, for the lack of a better word, from political correctness, financially, socially, or both, must at all costs continue to instigate change based on the lies, innuendo, and faulty conclusions they've drawn so that the needed societal metamorphosis continues to occur, and all the while they'll ignore it. They'll pretend nothing's happening. At the very least, the state of flux, uncertainty, and insecurity within society needs to be maintained for no other reason than to keep people on edge and off kilter. Now, realizing what is at stake allows a person to stand apart from and remain free of the ravages of political correctness. It's our eyes are open. We see it. And so, therefore, we're not affected by it, or we can keep ourselves from being affected by it. We can isolate it, and we can even call attention to it as the true source of the problem. Those within the politically correct arena want to hide that method being used so that only the intended results are realized, whether those results are good for everyone or not. And they're usually not. In truth, they are decidedly not good for everyone. And we've already seen in a variety of situations facing the world today in America, how that's working out. Political correctness leading to cultural Marxism only seeks to bring equality and freedom to certain groups in society, not all. Now, under the PC umbrella, as we've mentioned, certain groups are ignored and even vilified as the reason why the other groups in society must be given special status and privilege. It's all designed to allegedly even things out. But of course, the question is, when are things evened out enough? The short answer is never. That's because under political correctness, we're chasing after equality, not justice. Now, this unwritten code that directs society causes people to go along with the agenda because people are deadly afraid of being called racist or sexist or bigoted. No one likes that, especially a person who is honestly innocent of those charges. Now, to prove it, they'll go along with the system, often without realizing it, because of the pressure placed on them from others within society. This is what they do to avoid being a cast-off of society, as a pariah, or seen as anathema. Now, referring again to what Anthony Brown has stated, and I referred to him, he's the author of a book, he's an author who resides in the United Kingdom, referring to what he has to say about how the average person makes a decision in society today, it's clear that many to most feel an obligation to come not necessarily to the correct answer, but to the politically correct one. And let me quote to you from his book, The Retreat of Reason, and this is from page 5, quote, "For the modern mind, confronted with a new set of policy options on a difficult issue, the first reaction is not to try and divine the right answer, but the politically correct one. Many people will think first of what the true answer is, and in an effort to avoid controversy or offense, they'll measure it up against the dictates of political correctness. Those whose intellectual faculties have been all but closed down by political correctness have learned to automatically shortcut to the PC response," unquote. You know, that's terrible in its truthfulness. That's what we have become in many portions of society, and that is how political correctness is reshaping the way people think and how they act and what they believe and what they will vocalize. One simple example is when black individuals would say things like, quote, this country will never elect a black man as president, unquote, before the 2008 election. Well, first of all, it assumes several things which are not true. And it's actually a racist statement, since it assumes that most or all white people are racist and would simply not vote for a black person under any condition because of the color of their skin. It's a form of racial triple dog dare ya. And obviously many white people took it to heart. And they felt an obligation to prove that they were not racist. In some cases, at least, white people voted for Mr. Obama for no other reason than to prove they were not racist. They'd say something like, there, I voted for Obama. See, I'm not racist. Well, that's an asinine reason to vote for someone, to be sure, yet it was done that way. And this is certainly not to suggest that all white people who voted for Mr. Obama were only doing so to prove that they were not racist, but it appeared as though many took the bait. Now, being white in a society that has increasingly grown hostile to white people is something that most prefer not to discuss. You can't talk about it because, you know, it stinks like nationalism or white supremacy. But it's a real problem. It's not an imaginary one. It exists because of created, unproven theories that are propagated by racists from minority communities who speak in intellectually educational terms and have the letters PhD after their names. Therefore, they, I guess, are seen as knowing what they're talking about. But their stated goal is to ensure that all students of color have their place at the table and are not lost in the shuffle. That's fine. It's certainly a worthwhile goal, and it's a necessary goal to have and pursue. However, the unstated goal is far different. The unstated goal is the evolution of minorities that will cause them to stand in line ahead of white people, since it is long believed that whites are privileged simply because of their color of their skin. And you can read previous articles that I've written on critical race theory and sound political theology at my blog, studygrowknowblog.com. Let's take a few examples in the time remaining. There's an article called Being White in Philly, and it's written by a gentleman by the name of Robert Huber. In it, he discusses issues of race and problems associated with it. He tells how his son went to Temple University and lived in a section of Philly not far from campus. Well, not far from his son's apartment were row houses that were not in the greatest shape. Windows were broken, doors chained with padlocks, and other things that generally testified of the crime, the tragedy, and the broken humanity that lived there. Huber notes that he'd, quote, begun to think that most white people stopped looking around at large segments of our city, at our poorest and most dangerous neighborhoods, a long time ago. One of the reasons, plainly put, is queasiness over race. Many of those neighborhoods are predominantly African American, and if you're white, you don't merely avoid them, you do your best to erase them from your thoughts, unquote. Well, of course, that quote contains verbiage that on the surface is not considered by all to be politically correct, yet Huber is being honest. The truth is there in what he stated. He's referring to the fact that it appears on the surface that many within the white community do not want to consider the difficulties associated with interracial communities and communication within those communities, so it's avoided while giving it lip service. In truth, I'm not sure we know what to do about it, though I'm fairly certain I know what is not helping and what is making things worse. Well, he goes on to say, quote, at the same time, white Philadelphians think a great deal about race. Begin to talk to people, and it's clear it's a dominant motif in and around our city. Everyone seems to have a story, often an uncomfortable story, about how white and black people relate, unquote. Well, it's clear from the illustrations he provides that there are plenty of examples of situations in which it's difficult at best for whites and blacks in this case to come together to think the same thoughts or recognize the same motives. In one example, he speaks of a young white woman who misplaced her BlackBerry. He speaks of how that situation became a racial situation unintentionally. She did not know what else to do except send a message via a social network site to everyone she could think of in her class, asking if any of them had come across it. Well, there was one black student in the class who took umbrage at the post, responding with, quote, "Why would I just happen to pick up a BlackBerry? And if this is a personal message, I'm offended," unquote. Well, the young white woman then had to explain that she had emailed everyone at the same time, not just the black student. The black student then, you know, rejoined her with, quote, "Next time, be careful what type of messages you send around and what you say in them," unquote. You know, there was really nothing wrong with the way the young woman had approached the subject. She didn't know what else to do. And some would say there was nothing wrong in the way the black student responded, apart from some sensitivity. But where does this ultra sensitivity come from, and how is it engendered? Well, in spite of the tension, the woman who had lost her phone, named Susan, made a concerted effort to say hi to the black student whenever their paths crossed after that event. And eventually the tension evaporated. Huber points out that it was very possible that the black student, they were attending Villanova. It's also known on the streets in Philadelphia as Vanilla Nova, was reacting from a perceived lack of welcome to African Americans at the school. Now, Huber highlights other situations and examples that speak to the perception of race, whether real or imagined, that exists today. The problem is that political correctness does nothing, absolutely nothing, to calm racial tensions or even denounce all forms of racism, regardless of the person's race. But too often, it winds up creating a true oversensitivity or hypersensitivity toward the issue. In essence, the favoritism shown to some because of political correctness is simply another form of racism that's wind up being directed toward whites, since they are the perceived creators of racism. Robert Huber comes to much the same conclusions. He says, quote, "On one level, such self-consciousness and hypersensitivity can be seen as progress when it comes to race, a sign of how much attitudes have shifted for the better, a symbol of our desire for things to be better. And yet lately, I've come to fear that the opposite might also be true, that our carefulness is in fact at the heart of the problem," unquote. That makes you think. If we have become hypersensitive, as Huber suggests, and I would concur, by the way, this would account for the unwillingness of minorities to discuss the problem of race as it applies to whites. Huber again says, quote, "What gets examined publicly about race is generally one-dimensional, looked at almost exclusively from the perspective of people of color. Of course, it's black people who have faced generations of discrimination and who deal with it still, but our public discourse ignores the fact that race, particularly in a place like Philadelphia, is also an issue for white people, though white people never talk about it," unquote. Minorities do not want to hear about the potential sufferings of whites due to political correctness or reverse discrimination because most don't believe whites have suffered or do suffer any form of racism. They likely believe whites created it. Therefore, whites are the guilty party, the problem. Well, to this, we can only wonder what positive effects cultural Marxism has for society as a whole. I can't see any at all. What I see is a society becoming far worse because of what the vehicle of political correctness has worked to define and create within our society. Political correctness divides, separates, and conquers. It forces people to focus on inequities, not justice. And that's our show for today. I thank you so much for joining me. Of course, we'll continue this next time. And until we meet again, I pray that God will open your eyes to show you how blessed you are.
You've been listening to Study, Grow, Know with Dr. Fred DeRuvo. Please join us each week for new broadcasts that deal with theology, prophecy, and political issues from a biblical, conservative perspective.